Chapter 31. Coruscant. Luke felt a presence, the arrival of someone strong in the Force. He opened his eyes. Hovering over the floor in front of him, meters from him, was his nephew and one-time prize pupil Jason, lightsaber lit in his hand. Except it was not truly Jason. Whoever it was reeked of dark side energy, and his stare promised only malevolence.
"Not nice," the false Jason said.
Luke rose.
"Who are you, really?"
The not Jason snorted.
"You barely exist. You don't need to know."
He took an odd, gliding step forward. It was only the slightest of exertions, but he floated meters toward Luke. Luke lit his lightsaber. The not Jason struck, a fast, powerful lateral blow that Luke met with little effort, without conscious thought. Not Jason's blade was immediately in guard position for an anticipated counterstrike, but Luke held back. Oddly, the force of the impact sent his opponent floating backward. Not Jason drifted until he hit the corridor wall, which checked his motion, and he floated gently to the floor. Then Luke heard the humming and chattering of lightsabers in conflict. The muffled noise was coming from his own quarters. Mara rose, throwing her covers off in a move designed to hurl them over attackers and give her a moment to collect herself. As she came up on her feet, she reached out and pulled through the force, and was rewarded with the comforting weight of her lightsaber hilt thumping into her hand. The room was lit in hues of red by the lightsaber blade hovering in the middle of the room. It was held by a small, misshapen form whose feet were well off the ground. The figure was faced away from her as she rose, but now, boosted by a little push in the force that Mara could detect, it turned in mid-air and presented glittering red eyes to her. It was a boy, maybe 13 years of age. Its features resembled Ben's, but were twisted in anger, an anger that looked like it had years of abuse, jealousy, and rage behind it. The boy's hair, unlike Ben's, was blonde, styled in a sort of bowl cut with bangs. And Mara realized with a shock that it was the hairstyle of Luke Skywalker in his youth. She'd seen the hollows of him in his adolescence. Worse, for she'd seen those hollows as well, it was the hairstyle of the juvenile Anakin Skywalker. The boy drifted gently down to the floor.
"You're not my mother," he said.
His voice was a serpentine hiss, full of loathing.
"Good," Mara answered. "Then it won't be a family crime to cut you down."
She lit her lightsaber, and its blue glow clashed with the red already suffusing the chamber. The blonde boy leapt at her, lightsaber extended in a spear-like thrust, but as he came within range, he spun the blade around and, lo, in a sweeping cut. Mara danced back and to one side, out of range of the attack, and negligently waved a hand at the boy. His eyes widened as her wash of force energy caught him and threw him against a wall. Against and through. He disappeared, and the glow of his lightsaber vanished with him. Mara could still feel his presence, his proximity, even if she could no longer say in which direction he was to be found. She brought her lightsaber up in a defensive posture and waited. Then she heard the clash of lightsaber blades from outside her quarters in the corridor. Star System MZX-32905, near Bimiel. Nalani reached up and struck, her yellow-white blade cutting through dense muscle and other tissues. There was a squeal of pain, and her captor, a Minok, but one with grasping, supple hands at the ends of its wings, released her and drifted in two different directions, its halves severed by her blow. All around her more Minoks flew. They darted in at her, reaching with those two wrong hands, lashing with their tail-like appendages. She lashed out at whatever came near her, cutting limbs away, using the force to turn her around in the air. She was dropping, too, but the rocky cavern floor was well out of sight beneath her. That was a quandary. Gravity was not strong here, but if she began dropping at a great enough altitude, she could still pick up considerable speed, deadly speed, by the time she hit the stone below. Why hadn't Ben reacted when she was grabbed and whisked away from him? Why hadn't he responded to her sudden shriek? The part of her brain still working on problems and logistics arrived at an answer to the problem of falling, a factor that endangered her would also be her salvation. The next time a Minok drifted in and tried to snap at her with its claws, she grabbed its fleshy wrist and tugged, allowing her to roll up onto the creature's back. It banked, trying to dislodge her, but she sprang away from it, sending her away from the floor once more. Now she could move where she chose. She bounced up toward a Minok, eluded its nasty central mouth, and kicked off from its underside, hurtling almost horizontally. The next one she encountered she used to send her downward, onto the back of one dozens of meters below. Each tried to grab her, tail-whip her, or snap at her as she approached, but she was always nimbler. On one of her descents, she saw the stone floor of the cavern. She calculated that her speed was not too great for a safe impact. Instead of bouncing off the next Minok in line, she rolled across its back and allowed herself to fall. She came down on the floor on her feet, sinking into a low crouch to absorb the impact, bouncing up half a dozen meters just from the flexion of her muscles. But she drifted down again, and now the Minoks whirled by overhead, not attacking.
"Well done."
That was a smooth male voice from behind her. She spun, the move carrying her up a meter into the air. Behind her stood a human man, dignified of bearing, his dark beard cut close in an elegant style. He was tall and a trifle overweight, but his loose-fitting black garments suggested that he was carrying around some muscle as well as fat. A silver lightsaber hilt, inlaid with polished black stones shaped like diamonds, hung from his belt. Nalani drifted to the floor again and kept her own lit blade between them.
"Who are you?"
He shrugged.
"I doubt you'd know my birth name, but the other you may recognize. I am Darth Vectivus."
Nalani waved a hand at the caverns around them and gave him a smirk.
"The master of all this?"
"Once, maybe. Now I'm merely a ghost, or perhaps less."
"What would be less?"
"A remnant, a sliver of a ghost."
He looked just a bit unsettled.
"Even as I speak, I am unaware of myself, of thinking, of decision-making. Could I, in fact, be nothing?"
"No, I can feel you, gleaming in the Force, shining with the dark side."
He shook his head.
"That's not me. That's whomever I am connected to."
"Connected to?"
Now it was his turn to wave around.
"Every phantom you see here, every one you encounter, is connected to something that is distinctly real, distinctly alive, though possibly far, far away. Every time you struck a Minok, a living being somewhere suffered the pain and injury you inflicted."
With his statement, a knot of sickness formed in Nelani's stomach.
"You're lying."
"No, I'm not. You struck, and somewhere, some creature, perhaps a baby bantha, squealed in pain and was severed, killed before the disbelieving eyes of its mother."
"Stop it."
"Why? It's the truth. Baby banthas are quite cute, you know. A terrible shame to see one cut in half."
"You're sick."
"But perhaps it wasn't cute little baby banthas. Perhaps it was piranha beetles." "You wouldn't mind cutting piranha beetles in half, would you? Or perhaps Kowakian monkey lizards?"
He shook his head.
They say that every creature is cute when it is a baby, a mechanism of nature to help creatures reach the age of reproduction. But it's not true of every species. Have you seen immature monkey lizards? Ugliest little larvae in the galaxy. He shuddered.
What do I have to do to shut you up?
Oh, that's simple. Kill me.
He took a bounding, gliding step forward.
Sweep your lightsaber blade across my neck. Topple my head from my shoulders. The Minox will go away, and you'll be able to find your way back to your friends.
He landed only 2 meters from her and knelt before her.
Go ahead.
You can't be that anxious to die.
I died centuries ago.
Darth Vectivus bowed his head.
So I won't feel anything. Go ahead and strike.
And what about the life you say you're connected to?
Vectivus looked up again and grinned at her.
He or she will become a free-floating head, I'm afraid. Rather to the surprise of everyone in the vicinity. Why, look, Father, Mother's performing a new trick. Mummy? Mummy?
Nalani glared down at him.
Is this taunting necessary?
Yes, it is. To goad you into the action you need to perform.
Vectivus bared his neck for her again.
By killing one, whoever it is I'm attached to at the moment, you'll save scores, hundreds, thousands. What you think of as the evil of my dark side teachings will not spread so far. So kill me.
No.
Would it help if I took on a more hateful form? A piranha beetle in human guise?
Vectivus's clothes shimmered and flowed. Suddenly, he was in a full-coverage cloak and hood, his face in deep shadow. He reached up with suddenly white, suddenly wrinkled hands to pull back the hood and reveal the pallid, almost reptilian features of Emperor Palpatine, Darth Sidious, dead now for more than 35 years. His voice, too, was Palpatine's, insidious and cloying.
How about this? Could you strike this down?
Not while you're connected to an innocent life.
Palpatine rose, and, shimmering as he did so, was Vectivus again by the time he was on his feet. His expression was sympathetic, but a bit pitying.
Jedi girl, you're not strong enough to save lives. You're not strong enough to sacrifice one to save many.
I could sacrifice myself to save many.
Yes, but then you wouldn't have to face the accusing eyes of the survivors of those you sacrificed. You don't have that kind of strength.
That's ruthlessness, not strength.
Vectivus laughed at her.
Strength that is never touched by ruthlessness is touchingly irresponsible. Perhaps you will be fortunate and never have to decide the fate of an innocent life.
He gestured at Nalani. No, beyond her. And she felt a pulse of force energy in the distance behind her. She moved, a floating bounce that allowed her to turn but keep Vectivus in the periphery of her vision. In the distance, where Vectivus gestured, the rails that had borne Breesha's car to these depths were briefly illuminated. Even when the light faded, she could still feel them, could mark their presence in the force as though they were living things.
Go there, Vectivus said, and climb those rails to safety. Wait for the others to join you once they have made their decisions about their own fates.
His voice took on a kindly tone.
I don't want you to die unnecessarily, and as weak as you are, If you meddle in the affairs of others, that's precisely what will happen to you.
Go to hell,
Nalani said.
Vectivus shrugged.
Perhaps I did. I wouldn't know. Then he faded from sight, and as he disappeared, the susurrating noise of the Minox wheeling overhead also vanished.
Nalani spared a look upward. They were gone, leaving not even a trace in the force. Anxiety welled within her, a fear concerning the fate of her friends, and she began bounding toward the distant, unseen spot where the rails reached the floor of this cavern. They were her path to the surface, true, but also her path into the lower reaches, where Jason and Brescia awaited.
Relidir Trollis.
Han winced as his pursuer's lasers hammered at his stern. He'd diverted extra power from his bow shields to reinforce the stern, a dangerous gambit. If laser fire from the oncoming E-wings missed Wedge, it could accidentally smack into Han's bow and ruin his day. Ruin the rest of his life, in fact. But Wedge had managed to vape one of the E-wings with laser fire of his own, and the other had peeled off. It was now circling around to drop in behind the Aleph and reinforce it. Not that the Aleph needed much reinforcing. Wedge's little girl was good at her job. She'd dropped so low and come in so close behind the Shriek that Han's turret lasers couldn't depress enough to attack her, and meanwhile she could chew up his thrusters with impunity. If only he had a stern-mounted weapon. Wait a minute. He did. He had a bomb bay full of spotter droids. His fingers flew over his weapons console, punching in a set of unusual commands. He hit the execute button. Two of his spotter droids would now be sliding into the bomb drop slots.
"Control reports missiles launched," Wedge said. "They'll be showing up on our sensors any second."
"Good," Han said. He gritted his teeth to keep from continuing. "I hope your baby daughter, whom I've bounced on my knee, doesn't shoot my tail off before I see them. I hope she makes a run for it when she sees them. I hope I don't have to kill her."
The ready light glowed green on his weapons console. He hit the temporary command button he'd just programmed.
"Got him! Got him! Got him!"
Zweb called, gloating, as his lasers continued to chew the tail end of the mystery bomber to pieces.
"Something's going on with the underside,"
Sial said. She wanted to drop another meter, but suspected she'd bottom out on the street. Even so, she could already see something changing on the bomber's underside, panels sliding aside, something moving into position there on either side of the bomber's center line.
"That looks like... does that look like feet to you?"
Zweb ducked his oversized Sullustan head as far as he could.
"Yes! Feet! Silvery feet! One pair on either side!" "What the blazes?"
Those feet, and the humanoid bodies they were attached to, suddenly plummeted from the bomber. Sial had a glimpse of two flailing bodies, like dull silver protocol droids with oddly shaped rifles as they dropped into her path and hurtled toward her bow. Sial couldn't help it. Her hand twitched on the control yoke, an instinctive attempt to avoid the collision. Then came the impact, one droid hitting each of the Aleph's forward viewports. The one hitting the starboard viewport shattered. In her peripheral vision, Sial had a momentary impression of arms and legs flying in all directions. The one hitting the port viewport, directly in front of her, didn't shatter. It held on, its face right there in the center of the transparisteel, and it offered Sial what seemed to her like a reproachful expression. In that moment, she recognized it as a type of standard spotter droid. Then Sial's involuntary sideslip carried the Aleph far enough that its starboard laser turret began scraping along the building fronts there, tearing marquees and signs off edifices. She jerked the yoke to port, trying to free herself from that deadly friction before it spun her right into a building, and felt the shuddering end as she broke free. No time to think. Now she was traversing toward the buildings to port, and the droid was still looking at her. Gently, she corrected her course, noting absently that the bomber had gained scores of meters on her.
"Great flying, Grave Four."
The voice was male, unknown to her, the accent Coruscanti. Sial couldn't risk taking her attention from the avenue ahead long enough to consult her comm board.
"Who's that?"
"You've got Axe Three as your wing."
"Axe, you tear him up while I get my life in order here."
"Will do. Be advised, I'm picking up a huge pursuit squadron on our tail. And it's not ours."
Zweb unbuckled and leaned forward. With his fist, he pounded on the inside of Sial's viewport. The droid outside turned its head to look at him, and this change in its aerodynamics was apparently enough. The Aleph lurched, and the droid was suddenly gone, whipped away by the altered airflow across its surface.
"Thanks,"
Sial said.
"No problem."
The Sulliston eased back into his gunner's seat and rebuckled.
"Right turret is jammed. Axe Three correct. Huge cloud of incoming vehicles on our tail."
Sial gave the control yoke a tentative adjustment. The Aleph moved back to the center of the avenue, responding correctly. Only then did she check her sensor board. It showed the E-wing high overhead, and in her peripheral vision, she could see red lasers from the fast-moving starfighter hammering the bomber ahead of her. Far behind was an immense cloud of vessels moving up at tremendous speed. It would be on her in 30 seconds or less, and the sensor board still couldn't tell her what the individual vehicles in it were. And up ahead, beyond the first of the bombers, but too close, was the end of the avenue, a huge, newly constructed housing building. Sial looked up, and her eyes widened. If she pulled up into a climb right now, she might be able to clear the tops of the surrounding buildings. But the foremost bomber was so close to the building, there was no way it could avoid a collision. She saw that bomber fire missiles ahead and downward. The street just before the big building erupted in smoke and dust, and in the split second before it was swallowed by the dust cloud, she would have sworn she saw the bomber dive toward the street. The second bomber, the one she'd been harassing, lost altitude. Its pilot had no distractions. Axe Three was now climbing away from the engagement, ascending to safety. Sial became aware that Zweb was screaming at her. Something about climbing, about continuing to live. She ignored him and glanced at her sensors. The zone where the missiles had hit was still only partly realized on the screen. But it was a big hole, and the first bomber was gone. It wasn't hitting the building, wasn't veering right or left in a futile attempt to get free of the surrounding construction. It was just gone. Into the hole. Sial aimed her Aleph along the second bomber's wake. Zweb was shouting something about insanity and destruction. She ignored him. She took the control yoke in both hands. The second bomber disappeared into the smoke cloud. On the sensor board, it dropped into the hole in the street. As Sial reached that point, she slammed downward on the yoke, compressing it for a fraction of a second. Her top-mounted vents fired, jolting the Aleph downward. It didn't hit anything. Through the viewports, there was only smoke and darkness. On the sensor screen was the tail end of that chewed-up bomber blasting forward between banks of heavy-looking columns. There was debris, heavy dust and particulate matter ahead of it. It rose toward the debris. As her Aleph reached the point where the bomber began its rise, she jerked upward on her yoke, and the bottom-mounted vents fired. She added some repulsor lift kick. The Aleph jolted upward, compressing her backbone and cutting off Zweb's shrieks. And suddenly they were in sunlight again. Green parklands and the shimmering dome of a military energy shield lay ahead. The first bomber was circling to port around the shield, the second bomber to starboard. Both were dropping their bomb loads. spotter droids floating to the ground, their descents slowed by the sort of short-use repulsor lift plates used by airdrop commando troops. Above circled squadrons of X-wings, Eta-5 interceptors, E-wings, the complete ground complement of the Relidir garrison. Zweb was shrieking something about great flying and having children and holodramas. Sial ignored him. Something was adding up in her head. Cold numbers and facts. She slammed on the reverse thrusters to slow the Aleph, jerking Zweb forward in his seat, and switched her comm board over to the general fleet frequency.
"This is Grave 4 to all GA forces," she said.
She felt curiously emotionless, but she knew that she had merely contained her emotion, not eliminated it.
"Incoming enemy squadrons traveling east to west toward Relidir Central are missiles, and they have an unobstructed path to the interior shield. Be ready."
She switched back to squadron frequency. As the front end of the Aleph swung around, and the building they'd just flown beneath was framed by their viewports, she brought the Aleph to a dead halt in the air.
"Zweb, fire missiles. Bring that building down. Hit the base first."
"What?"
"That's an order. Bring that building down from ground level up."
Zweb's hands reached for his weapons controls. Coruscant. The not Jason came at Luke again and again, making prodigious leaps, bounding from wall to wall, from ceiling to floor, as if immune to gravity. With each pass, he hurled 1, 2, 3 lightsaber blows at Luke, striking again and again until, thrown back by the impacts, he was too far away to engage. Luke countered every blow and pitched attacks of his own. He felt the skin of his left forearm pucker a little from the heat of a near hit, saw the not Jason's robes catch fire just under the right armpit from an especially close thrust of Luke's. But not Jason patted the flames out and merely grinned at him. Not Jason seized a ceiling glow rod fixture and hung there as though his weight were nothing.
"You're just about as good as my true master," not Jason said.
Luke gave him a quizzical look.
"And who is that?"
"You know,"
not Jason said.
"By the way, you'd look good with a beard."
"You think so?"
Luke ran his free hand over his clean-shaven chin.
"Well, I'm not sure what our disagreement is, but perhaps it could be settled by talking."
"I try not to negotiate with phantoms, with things that don't exist. Better to just cut them in half and watch them disappear."
Not Jason kicked off from the wall and flew forward again. Star System MZX-32905, near Bimiel. As the Sith Mara's force attack swept him away from her, Ben switched his lightsaber off. Whirling within the power of her attack, instead of fighting against it, he added some force energy of his own, shoving him laterally across the direction of her attack. And suddenly he was being swept at almost right angles to the direction she'd sent him. For half the duration of each spin he was making, he could see her, illuminated by her lightsaber. And now she was looking in the wrong direction. His maneuver had worked. He slammed into a wall of stone, managed to keep from grunting in pain. He rebounded off the surface and began to drop toward the floor below. He calculated it as only 10 meters down, an easy drop in this gravity. When he hit the ground, he did so with a silence that would probably please his real mother. In the distance, the Sith Mara stood ready, her head turning this way and that, seeking for him with her force senses as well as with her eyes. Ben tried to blank out his mind, to erase his thoughts, to give her nothing to look for. And he wasn't using the Force. That would help. But he was the only person within hundreds of meters of the Sith Mara. That should make it child's play to find him. Yet somehow it didn't, and she kept looking. Ben made one long lateral bound, circling the Sith Mara's position. In that time, Sith Mara stopped moving. She stood stock still, her lightsaber down at an angle suited to bringing it up in a blow or an umbrella-style defensive posture, and Ben suspected that her eyes were closed. Silently, he launched himself forward. He brought his unlit lightsaber back at a ready-to-strike angle and kept his thumb on the power stud. His jump was accurate. He didn't need to correct it with little force adjustments. He flew directly toward her, closing the gap between them as fast as a thrown zone ball. Then he was near enough to see her face, her features. She was at rest, her eyes closed. At peace. This wasn't his mother, but it was his mother's face, and there was no evil in it, no Sith malevolence. He couldn't thumb on his lightsaber and kill her. He just couldn't. She turned toward him and her eyes opened, red glowing as before. She continued her turn into a spin. A chill of fear cut through his middle, and he knew that her lightsaber blade would follow where the chill had been. But it was her foot that came up, snapping into his gut with the power of a combat droid's pistoning arm. In slow motion, he felt the wind leaving his lungs, felt himself folding over her foot, felt his internal organs compress and bruise. Then he was flying away, blackness washing across his eyes where the image of his mother had been.